Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Okay, folks, welcome. This is Dr. William Curtis with the WFO Life Podcast. I am here with our first repeat guest.
Making history.
Making history, that's right. This is Dr. John Sullivan. And for those of you who didn't hear Dr. Sullivan's first interview, it was a few weeks ago, and we did a kind of a rambling topic on diabetes and metabolic disease and things like that. And it was a really well-received episode. Lots of people downloaded that. And because that was such a popular episode, and it seemed like people really are starving for good nutrition and medical information, what I thought I would do is have just a little bit of a bonus material where Dr. Sullivan and I and other healthcare experts will sit down and talk specifically, you know, health and nutrition, lifestyle, things like that. I think that's really important because if you're trying to live a wide open life and get the most out of life, one of the things really important is your health. And I think I did a podcast and a little episode just last week that I talked about how some people, they spend so much of their vital energy solving medical problems and chasing medical issues rather than living their best lives.
And also, not to mention draining their bank accounts.
Exactly. Which is a huge problem in our country. If you back up even further from that, I just saw that there's people starting to beat the drum of regulation of the fast food industry and all these types of things because people are running out of ideas. They realize that giving people pills in the traditional Western model of medicine doesn't fix anybody. It doesn't, you know, it might save your life in a pinch if you got a, you know, you need some kind of procedure done that saves your life. But taking pills over the long haul, but having a terrible diet and everything just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think Dr. Roy Lee was famous for quoting. He said, "We're treating the symptoms of starvation with drugs, and you're never going to make up for nutritional deficiency with the medication."
Right.
They're life saving and they can be very beneficial and useful, but for chronic disease, they can be a disaster also.
Yeah, and so I think big picture wise, there's a lot of folks that are, you know, and I'm very almost maybe libertarian in the sense that I want to be able to chart my own course and I don't want the government telling me what I can and can't do.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it's really distressing to walk through a grocery store and have to walk around piles of candy and baskets. You know, I went into a store close by that had baskets that were like 50-gallon totes full of junk candy. And it's just people don't know any better. They just grab it.
They do. You know, stores are going to provide what the consumer wants.
Right.
So we just need to educate them
what
the best choices are.
Right.
And the consumer is the one that has the ultimate power. So it's up to us.
Right.
And we blame our doctors. Of course, I am very hard on the medical system itself that they place you in. I mean, you're put under the gun.
Right.
Sometimes you don't have a choice in the medication you prescribe because that's standard of care. And if you don't do that, you can get your license taken away.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we can blame the doctors, but ultimately it lies in us, the patients' hands.
Yeah. I mean, what's the biggest we've talked about these before with your diabetics that you've treated in the past. Some of the best outcomes we've ever had nothing to do with medications.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, nothing. Okay.
Because it wasn't a deficiency in the insulin. As a matter of fact, they're making too much insulin.
Right. Exactly.
So that wasn't the problem.
So before the show, we chatted about the idea of talking about maybe, you know, as a series of medical niche episodes of the WFO Life podcast, we thought about doing some on specific areas of health.
Right.
One of them that always comes up, and this is definitely in the top 10 diagnoses that I see in clinic, is thyroid disorders.
Yes.
Typically hypothyroidism.
And there's a lot more that people don't even know. They don't even know they have it, because it's a metabolic disease we talked about. And why is that so important? Because it's your metabolism. Every cell in your body either is trying to reproduce, trying to grow, or make energy.
Right.
And without energy, we don't live.
Right.
So metabolic disease is very important. So that includes obesity. That includes things like diabetes and cancer. I mean, and heart disease.
Right.
Your major killers. Your major.
That's all the big ones.
So that's it.
Oh, except for I think the number three cause of death now is medication.
yes. Doctor induced. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm trying to watch out for that one. Yeah.
We're not going to go there today.
So give me your take on thyroid condition, generally speaking. It seems like even in my career over the last 20 years, thyroid disease, in particular low thyroid function, has increased in prevalence.
Yes. Well, let's discuss what the thyroid actually is. It's a gland that lives in the neck, at the base of the neck, and it wraps around your windpipe. It's a gland, and glands are things that produce hormones. And hormones are little chemical messengers that tell the body what to do. They control and regulate every aspect of us.
Right.
How fast our hair grows, our skin health, our emotional health, how fast our heart beats. Everything is regulated by these little chemical messengers. And these little chemical messengers, you have glands all over your body, and they all work on a biofeedback system. They work at like a symphony, and they need to be in harmonious interaction with one another.
Right.
And it's like a symphony. If your bassoon is out of tune, or your strings are playing a different song than the rest of the orchestra, it's going to sound like a noisy mess.
Yeah, off key.
Mm-hmm. Off key. And in medicine, that's called disease.
Right.
When things are out of balance.
Dis-ease.
Exactly.
Dis-ease.
And so that's why, and right in the center of all this is conducting this orchestra is your thyroid gland. It regulates everything from temperature to energy to the breathing. And a lot of people don't realize that one of the biggest things that thyroid regulates is heart function and vascular function that a lot of people are dealing with. And
do you think that the thyroid, I often describe it to patients as almost like it's sort of like a gas pedal in the body. Would you say I think that it kind of helps regulate the pace at which our metabolic burn is occurring.
It does. I mean, people who are hyperactive or hypoactive, it can be thyroid.
Right.
You can be either overactive or underactive.
Right.
So it can either be a stimulant or a brake. People who gain excess weight can be thyroid. People who lose weight can be thyroid.
Right.
People with high energy, low energy. People typically that have trouble dealing with changes in temperature.
Right.
They're either too hot or too cold.
Right.
That can be thyroid. Now, heart palpitations or the heart beating too slow can be thyroid.
It can be both.
It can, so thyroid can and do both, and it's like a light flickering on and off.
Right.
The thyroid can do the same thing. You can be both at times. That's the tough thing about the thyroid and trying to diagnose thyroid problems, because it can be so many different things going on with the system
right.
at the same time. I wanted to kind of take a different approach to this.
Sure.
Because I'm always a person that kind of looks at things from different angles.
Sure.
And I know as a physician, I've always admired you greatly because the way you look at patients, you always, maybe it's because you're a good coach. You know, if you watch a game, you can always tell when the other team's about to break psychologically
right.
or physically. You always can analyze how that pitcher's doing on the mound.
Right.
You can tell, and coaches to me sometimes, especially baseball managers, and you can always, so many coaches go by analytics, and instead of knowing their player, does that pitcher have an extra inning in him? And how many times have you seen where a pitcher's dominating the game, but then the coach will pull him out in the eighth inning and put in a reliever, and then
right.
the reliever gets lit up. And
right.
you're saying, why did you take out a
doctor? Yeah, he was fine.
He
yeah.
was fine.
Yeah.
Because he was looking at analytics
right.
instead of knowing his players and how to deal with his players. I had a coach one day who had an All-American baseball player. He's playing third base. This kid at the state game, at the big game, made two errors in a row. And this kid was falling apart. So the coach had to decide, now, I can either leave this kid alone, but he's feeling really bad because he made these errors, and he's this All-American kid. I can yell at him. I could pat him on the back and tell him it's okay. But I knew this kid. I jumped his rear end.
Mm-hmm.
I chewed him up one side and down the other, and he smiled because he was relieved at that point. He paid the price for what
right,
he did,
right.
and he was back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your players.
Right.
And you've always done that with patients.
Right.
When patients walk in, you always, because there's an art to looking at a
sure.
patient instead of just and just the biometrics, there's more to that person. And in medicine, what happens, and it's in the medical journals a lot, men and women, I know some political parties, one major political party here would say, there's no difference in men and women.
Right.
There is a difference from a cellular level on up. They're
yeah.
genetically different.
Right.
Even when you go into med school, we could look at a skeleton and tell which was a male or female skeleton
because
mm-hmm. they're different, you know, from a structural
yep.
level on up. As a coach, I had a coach who used to say, well, you have to train your female athletes differently. He said, I didn't in the past, and I kept injuring them.
Right.
You look at Alberto Salazar with the Nike up, their project up in Oregon, where they were And he was this maniacal coach who would train his women the same as men. And he ruined so many women's careers because of the way he treated them. And you can't treat them like a man. They're not men.
Right.
They don't have the same bone structure. They don't have the muscle tone. They don't have the testosterone. And if you take a female and you chart her hormone levels over the month and take a man's and chart his hormone levels over a month, well, man's is going to be in a straight line.
Right.
A woman's is going to look like a roller coaster.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, it's going to look like a roller coaster superimposed upon another roller coaster.
Right.
I mean, women are having to deal with all kinds of things that men don't even think about. I mean, I don't know what we think about today. You know, men thinking they can be a woman. You think you can just put on a lipstick and a pair of high heel shoes and you're a woman.
Right.
No, that's what it means to be a woman. I think our wives would be very upset with that thought. I mean, women are having to deal with monthly blood loss. They're having to, they have to deal with PMS. They're having to deal with pregnancy. They have to deal with perimenopause and menopause and all these other factors that we can't even imagine.
Well, it's an energy cycling too.
Yes.
You know, because when the hormones change, which is natural for a menses and a menstruating woman, there's a handling of energy that has to occur. So a woman's energy changes over the month. Men too, but less so. Cyclically like that. It may be more tied to maybe things like sleep and. Yeah.
You know, and we're not growing a new uterus every month.
Exactly,
and
going through a lot more resources being expended.
Yes, and that's for a reason. They're preparing for pregnancy.
Right.
We're not doing that.
Right.
You know, and we produce the same hormones, but they go to different parts of the body for different purposes,
right.
And different amounts. So there's a big difference. So it's been in the medical literature over the years. I mean, for decades and decades, a woman can come into a medical clinic with the same symptoms as a man, get treated differently, because women are considered the weaker sex. They're considered hormonal and imbalanced. And you hear this a lot, and unfortunately, they're considered the weaker sex because physically they may be, because structurally they're different. But you know, infant mortality rate for females is less.
Right.
Women live longer than us. So who is really genetically stronger?
I was going to interject that this is Dr. John Sullivan speaking. Because honestly, half the time the women have a higher pain tolerance.
Yes.
There are so many other things, you know, the workload and stuff that I think, it's very questionable whether they're truly the weaker sex.
But yeah. And as a coach, you know, women I know get a more emotional out on the field of athletics. But by God, they're vicious and they are great competitors.
Yeah, for sure.
More than a man.
Right.
So I don't know where that comes from, but deep down they pull stuff out that's glad I'm not playing against her. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I want to tell a couple of personal stories and I'll tie this together. But there was a young lady that works in our office. Her name is Priscilla, and I think you've met her. And she, a number of years ago, she was going through a painful divorce. She loved her husband dearly, but he loved alcohol more. Mm-hmm. And so it was a heartbreaking situation. So her OBG decided to help her out and put her on an antidepressant.
That's going to fix everything.
Yeah. You know, 10 years later, she's going around without emotion. She wasn't depressed, but she was never happy. Mm-hmm. And the employees at the office said, you know, we got to do an intervention here. You know, this person just going around, you know, just emotionless. This is not normal. And so they did an intervention that helped her start weaning off this. And now she's having to deal. And you know, anytime you suppress something in the body, what's it going to do? It's going to turn up the volume.
Sure.
So now she's having to deal with depression and lots of joy. And she's having to deal with the ups and downs of life. You haven't had emotions for 10 years, and now you're having to deal with them again.
Yeah, seems like a roller coaster.
It is. Yeah. And she's been like, whoa. And she's having feelings again. Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes depression is normal. Mm-hmm. You would be insane not to be depressed going through that time of her life. There was another young lady, her name was Jane. And Jane, was a young lady, met the love of her life, got married, had a little baby. And a little backstory, Jane had always had gut issues. And never, her digestion was always off. She never had a lot of energy, never had the energy she thought she should. And right after the baby, she crashed. I mean, she couldn't get off the couch. She felt awful, and she didn't feel like eating. And she had an aversion to foods, even. Mm-hmm. Or again, her OBG saw this, an aversion to foods. oh, that's a mental condition like anorexia.
Right, right.
And obviously, you're having body image issues since you just had a baby. So he put her on antidepressant. So 6 months later, she's a zombie. She's drooling on herself, literally. And she said, oh my, this isn't right. So she's now having to wean off that. And she said, you know what? One of the side effects of coming off this stuff is our hallucinations. And, you know, and you've helped patients come off these. I know you helped Priscilla. Absolutely. You got to wean off these things slowly because these are vicious side effects with these drugs. And another was Nancy, who was a mother of three. She had a great husband, very supportive, great job, everything she could want. But Nancy was suffering. She was tired and fatigued and run down, was having thinning hair. She was, not dealing well with changes in temperature. She was gaining weight, losing weight. And this was just, and she would seclude herself. She was snapping at her kids out of nowhere. She just didn't feel good. Again, what did her doctor prescribe? Antidepressant. But what did I just describe? I just described a typical...
thought you were a hypothyroid patient.
Yes!
I just
described that to a... And you've always been good at being able to read patients and pick that out. Right. I've always admired you for that.
Physical symptoms, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. and you've always been so good about that. But a lot of doctors, you know, they don't look at the patient themselves. And so many women get lost in that. And the last one I wanted to talk about, there was a couple of years ago, I was at the office, at my office at Bay, and I have to do a safety meeting every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on a safety topic, you know, what am I going to talk about to the guys this week? And a gentleman, his name is Joe, walked into my office. It was a Monday morning, and he was teary-eyed, and he said, John, there's something I want you to tell the guys. So after his story, I tore up what I was working on, and this is the topic I talked to him about. His wife of many years, one morning, woke up, Saturday morning, she woke up, she was nauseated, having trouble breathing, chest pain, and Joe's very concerned. She'd had a history of stroke years before she recovered. It was a mild stroke, she recovered. So he immediately rushed her to the hospital. It was in Ingleside, a little community near us. And they diagnosed her with the flu and sent her home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her condition deteriorated over the day, so he brought her into Corpus and rushed her to the hospital, and they found she'd had a massive heart attack. Mm-hmm. And they worked heroically to save her life, but they weren't able to. And the doctor said, Joe, if you could have just brought her in sooner.
Yeah.
He said, I did. I brought her to the hospital.
Right.
What's the number one killer in women? It's heart disease.
Yeah,
but we don't associate heart disease with women.
Right.
But it's the number one killer because we think, you know, women, again, they're a little different because they don't like to bother people. If they have an issue, if they're having chest pain, shortness of breath, oh, it'll pass.
Right.
They don't like, you know, so, you know, women in symptoms of heart attack are going to be different in men and women. It's not going to be as severe in a woman. It'll come and go. Chest pain will come and go. And so they'll ignore it. But it's still the number one killer, and we're not paying attention to that. So when a woman walks into the emergency room with the same symptom as a man, she's not treated the same.
Right.
And that's a shame. And we see that with thyroid problems all the time. Because what do we say? How thyroid can manifest itself as depression, as hyperactivity, irritability. It can be crushing fatigue. And all these things, people, oh, you're just an emotional woman. You're a bored housewife. You have all these emotional issues.
Right.
When it's not, their thyroid is failing them. And this is a big problem we see today in medicine, I think.
I would agree. And what you're describing is something that what happens is when patients come in with very, very complex symptoms, there's two tendencies when you're sitting in front of a patient. The tendency is to jump ahead and say, oh, that must be, like you said, the patients that were diagnosed with depression, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The second option is to start collecting the symptoms and seeing if there's a physical reason for some of those symptoms before. And reality is, if you look at DSM-4, DSM-5 criteria for depression, anxiety, and all these kind of disorders, most of them do say you're supposed to rule out medical issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think I'm that much of a wizard to be looking at all of the things.
But
except, you know, you do look at those things. If you look at them, you start to find there are physical connections and you do identify things. One thing I'll add onto what you were saying as you were leading up to thyroid stuff is that you can have all those symptoms and the thyroid test can be normal.
Yes, it's true. Because there's other things the other things that affect the thyroid. And the thing is, when we talked about a young lady who had gut problems all her life and she had a baby, that's classic postpartum depression. She's B vitamin deficient out the wazoo. Right. The other thing, gut issues. Where are 90% of our neurotransmitters made?
In the gut.
In the gut, not in the brain. Mm-hmm. So all your hormones that control and regulate your brain are made in the gut. We have medications for maybe 8 of them, but most of them are made in 300 different ones are made in the gut. So when you give someone an antidepressant or one of these psychotropic drugs, and I heard someone describe it like being in a dark room, throwing darts at a target that may or may not exist.
True. Yeah, so, I think it could be true. You know, the other thing, one more adding on to that, the microbiome, the bacteria that are in the gut have now been linked to mood disorders, anxiety, and actually specific colonies of bacteria. If you have the wrong ratios of bacteria in your gut, due to diet or stress or everything else that can happen to you, that can be associated. They don't know that it definitely causes depression, but again, there's an association that's very clear there.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's killing us today, just talking about the thyroid specifically, is in a lot of physicians, and they used to, where I got this information is out of some old medical books back in the 50s and 60s. They used to look at this a great deal. The thyroid makes a hormone called thyroxine. You can't make thyroxine without iodine.
Right.
And so many people the problem is, where do you get iodine from? There's no food source. There's very few food sources of iodine, unless you're eating a lot of seafood or seaweed.
Right.
And unless you're living on the coast, and especially in Japan, well, they get a lot of iodine. So iodine is very important, but we don't supplement with it anymore. Doctors don't even think about it.
Right.
The first thing they do is they give thyroxine. Well, if you read Henry Harrower's book, and if you ever have insomnia, it's a great book to read. And Dr. Harrower was the father of endocrinology. He wrote a great book on endocrinology back in the early 1900s. It's amazing how detailed it is and how much they knew back then.
Right.
He talked about you should never supplement a gland with hormones. You'll make a lazy gland. Mm-hmm. And you see this in athletes today when you give them steroids.
Right.
What do? You make their testicles shrivel up like raisins.
Right.
Body's efficient. If you're dumping hormones in the system, it's going to quit making them. Why would it continue to make them? Then you're going to have an overabundance of hormone. Well, if you take a struggling thyroid gland and immediately the first thing you do is give thyroxine, what's the gland going to do? It's going to shut down.
Down-regulate.
Right. Yeah.
Because the signal to not make hormone is circulating hormone.
Yes.
So if you give them external or extraneous hormone, it shuts the production off. It's the normal off switch for that gland.
Right. And then it's going to atrophy.
Right.
As things do. So what doctors did in the past was give iodine. 2/3 of the weight, the dry weight of the thyroid, is iodine. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important. It can't function without iodine.
Wait, 2/3 of the weight?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so, but that's what thyroxine is made out of. And if you think it's a very ingenious system, iodine is very, you put it on cuts because it's very cleansing.
Right.
Well, all the blood supply of the body goes through the thyroid. So it gets cleansed. It gets sterilized. It's a very ingenious system. The other thing that's very interesting, iodine, 80% of the iodine is needed for thyroid, 20% is needed for breast tissue, breast health. So iodine is very important for breast health, and it's very a cancer preventative. And again, that's in the medical literature too. So iodine is very, very important for breast health. For women who tend to have cystic, tender breasts or have had a history of breast cancer in their family, iodine can be life-saving. Again, we don't use it. We say, we put iodine in iodized, we have iodized salt in it. Of course, don't eat salt because it's bad for you. But that's their source, and it's actually not a very good source for iodine. So doctors in the past used to do what they called iodine fulfillment therapy. They'd either use a potassium iodine like iodorol or protein bound iodine, prolamine iodine. Mm-hmm. I think Standard Process makes that.
Right.
And so those are absorbable forms of iodine that the body can actually use and metabolize. The other interesting thing is you also need trace minerals and B12 and fatty acids to uptake iodine.
Right.
So all those things need to be present. So if you're deficient in minerals, electrolytes, which a lot of us are today, if you're deficient in fatty acids because everyone's on low-fat diets,
right,
or B12, which is only found in animal products, and in the fat of animal products because we're on low-fat diets, or if you're having digestive issues, Everyone's on antacids. You can't absorb minerals without an acidic stomach.
Yeah, you have to have strong acid to absorb minerals and nutrients, for sure. That's a huge problem.
And B12.
Yeah, right.
And you need a gallbladder, which everyone's getting taken out these days,
right,
to absorb your fat-soluble vitamins, your essential fatty acids, which you have to absorb and metabolize iodine. So many of us are on antacids, gallbladder problems, liver congestion, and we're just so deficient in these nutrients that we need. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize, and it's in drugs.com, I was really surprised. He said, never treat a thyroid issue without addressing the adrenal glands.
True. That's actually a tenet that in my clinic we talk about, as you know, the doctors in my group, we talk about that quite a bit. A lot of times people come in with apparent thyroid condition, you know, all the symptoms, you know, hair loss and fatigue and all the symptoms we described, but you look at their numbers are normal. Right. And I always remind them to look at the adrenal glands because these are our stress organs. These are the organs that are, you know, when we're not sleeping, either because we're stressed out, we have sleep apnea, or if we're in pain, chronic pain issues, or we have relationship issues, stress and things like that, your cortisol level is high all the time.
Yes.
And when that's high, that is an unbalanced hormone and it's shifting all your hormones around. And the thyroid has to work with the adrenal glands. And if it can't keep up, it will the human body will show signs of low thyroid function.
Right.
But really, it can't keep up with the demand of an overtaxed adrenal gland.
Again, we said it's got to be in a harmonious relationship with one another. The interesting thing about the adrenals convert T4, which the thyroid makes, into T3, the bioactive form.
Right.
So if you've crashed, you have adrenal fatigue, and who's not burning it at both ends these days, you've crashed your thyroid.
Yep.
You've crashed them both.
Well, you've dysregulated it. It can't see the proper mixtures of T3, T4, the different hormone. It can't see that because they're not being converted properly.
So look at a patient who's adrenal fatigue, whose thyroid isn't functioning properly, who's just trying to make it through the day. They're on energy drinks probably like crazy. They're having troubles with mood swings. Their weight's going up and down. They're having thinning hair, which is usually a sign of people that are stressed. And you just think it's stress, but no, that's a physiological problem there, a metabolic problem. You know, what are you thinking when you see especially a woman in that condition? She's stressed, tired, depressed, at her wit's end. Oh, we need to calm you down.
Right.
And that's the trouble we're seeing with so many women. This we're looking at a thyroid or adrenal fatigue problem,
right?
And we're giving them meds for that,
right? Which then in turn shuts the organ down, and
it makes it you complicate the problem.
So the general principle that you've laid out, and we talked nutrition before, in sort of parallel context to this, the idea is there's a different paradigm to treating some of these conditions.
Yes.
I've done that as far as our team at Future Focus. We tend to do that, is try to give the patient a chance, not just to throw medication at them, but to add things that would support those organs, because that's different than giving a hormone that absolutely shuts it off. Now, let me throw in there real quick.
There are times, yes.
What about glandulars? You know, these...
Those can be very good for helping support an organ short term.
Right.
Glandulars should only be given short term because they do contain hormone.
Right.
So, yes, and Harrower talks about when a gland's tired and fatigued, you can do that for a short period, but you don't want to do it long term.
Right.
Now, the other thing I was going to say and thought you might bring up is there are times when thyroxin can be a lifesaver.
Sure.
And when there's been too much damage to the thyroid gland, the disease has progressed too long. Because it can also, there's autoimmune diseases that attack the thyroid. Because if a gland's struggling, what's the immune system seeing? It sees a struggling gland. That's a breeding ground for infection. Yep. It's going to produce antibodies against it.
Right. Stress, maybe cells dying there, so it goes and cleans it up.
It goes in, and so you launch an autoimmune response against your glands or organs. That's, you know, it's going to tear it to pieces.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's been too much damage, and thyroxin can be a lifesaver and can change a person's life. So, yes, there's needs for medications.
One of the patients I still have now, poor guy still has a lot of medical issues, but when I first met him, he was in a coma. And I was an intern, so this is greater than 20 years ago.
Wow.
It was one of the first patients I saw, and when I met him, he was in a coma.
Golly.
And got to doing a workup, thought maybe he's a big heavy guy, I thought maybe he had a stroke or something. We do the full workup, and his TSH, which is his thyroid stimulating hormone, it's the screening tool we use for the thyroid, was greater than 180. So it was off the Richter scale.
Right.
He had no circulating his thyroid, you know, in his entire body. So basically we put him on a drip of continuous thyroid hormone to try to bring him back from the brink. And once we got his level down under 100, he started to wake up. And,
wow.
You know, we could extubate him and all these kinds of things. He didn't want to breathe. I mean, he's dying.
Yeah.
And now to this day, you know, he's on medication. His thyroid does not work anymore.
Right.
And this was a guy that came in, basically had neglected his health and did not get checkups, even though he was feeling terrible. He had all the classic symptoms of low thyroid function, very severe symptoms, and he never had them treated. But that is a person that, there are roles for the hormone.
If
you don't make it, you have to do it. Think of a type 1 diabetic.
Yes, absolutely.
If you don't make the hormone, you have to take it. But I think, this is my opinion, that the vast majority of people that walk through my door in a medical clinic that have thyroid symptoms, most of them do not require medication. Most of them require support. Either nutrition, usually it's a nutritional change. Okay, and we're back. We had a little glitch in the recording, so we're picking up again. John, you were saying?
Well, one of the reasons the thyroid is under the gun so much today is because we have chlorine in our water supply, and I understand the need for it to kill bacteria and stuff. And we put fluoride in the water, and we have bromide, which is a preservative that's put in every baked product. And those are halides that displace iodine out of the system. So the thyroid is not only working under a deficit, we're taking things into the system that's crashing or pulling iodine out.
Yeah, those are in the same elemental family in your chemistry periodic chart. That's why they can somehow they can sometimes fill the same gap that iodine can.
Yes. And so that's another problem. Also, when giving thyroid hormone, and you're very good at this, there's also natural alternatives like Natrethroid.
Okay.
And you've been very good at
yeah, we use that.
And that's been around longer than Synthroid. Right. It's been an older product, and it gives you the whole fraction of the thyroid hormone and not just a piece of it.
So if you've got to use it, having a whole or a thyroid supplementation that is in the same balance it should be in nature is a better option. And I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to – it's a little trickier and – to manage someone that's on that in the beginning, because a half life, I think, is 12 hours, and sometimes it does better if you give a morning and afternoon dose with it. Some of the doctors have found. So sometimes managing it's a little more difficult up front, but patients seem to respond to it a lot better in the long run.
You know, actually, I think one of the other things that might be a little more subtle as to why those sometimes can have variation in their effect. You're giving T3 and T4. You're giving both hormones with those in a ratio that should be helpful. But if your adrenal glands are crapped out, they're the ones that also will affect how you convert those hormones. And sometimes you get a strange conversion ratio. And I think that's another reason sometimes people get a little more side effect and stuff with it.
So knowing that is very important. You got to actually know your physiology, doc, when you're actually using nutrition or natural approaches. And that's something you have to go a little deeper in.
Right.
And you're always been so good at that. The other thing is when we don't recognize as physicians, we see enlarged thyroids or nodules on the thyroid. We think, oh my God, cancer, we got to do something. What are we looking at? The thyroid enlarges to create more surface area to capture iodine. Mm-hmm. It's doing it. So that's it's usually a sign when you start seeing nodules and enlarged thyroid. That's the thyroid screaming to you, I'm dying here. Feed me. And the food for the thyroid is iodine.
Right.
We had a patient years ago. She was 16, came into the office. And I was looking at her chart before I went in to see her. I said, what's she here for? And she had had her thyroid removed. It was an endocrinologist in town. And she said, oh, enlarged thyroid, that could be cancer. And so they removed her thyroid.
Goodness.
I looked at the lab report. It was a pretty pink, perfect organ or gland that they just took out of this young lady. And she's going to have to live with that the rest of her life.
She needs hormones forever now.
Yes.
Right. And thank you very much.
And my God, what all the things that the thyroid does. And so she all of a sudden she came in because she needed help losing weight because all of a sudden she'd packed on 30, 40 pounds overnight.
Right.
Without a good functioning thyroid. And it's terrible what we're thinking. We're looking at a thyroid that's telling you what's wrong with it, and you're not recognizing it. You're not seeing the bigger picture.
People hearing this story, I think ideally, there's a lot of people that fall into the category that might be listening to this, that I have some of those symptoms, but they're not on hormones, and they haven't had their thyroid removed, and they're not on permanent therapy for thyroidism. There's a right. lot of those patients that fall into that category. Maybe they're tired, they're gaining weight, their skin is dry, their hair's falling out. Maybe that's the case. There's a lot of people also that have already had to go down that road, like this poor patient we're talking about that had their thyroid removed at a young age. Right. There are still things that can be done to help those patients, because you've got to think about it. We just said earlier, and I'm glad you brought up the whole idea about the adrenal glands, because there's so many people that come in that are on thyroid hormone already, and they say, but I still have thyroid symptoms, and I'm on the hormone.
Yes.
Why is that? It's because probably your adrenal glands are not utilizing what's already there, or your adrenal glands are out of balance more than anything else. The point being, even if you already have full-blown thyroid disease and you have to be on a hormone, there may still be ways to improve how you feel and the clinical symptoms you have.
Absolutely.
By supporting the other glands and endocrine system that you know, it's like you have a governor. You know, I'm a car guy, so everything's a car analogy. And it's like if you had a thyroid hormone and you don't make your own because you had your thyroid removed and you're on a thyroid hormone, well, you're getting this steady state dose of something that really was not meant to be steady state all the time. It was meant to fluctuate based on our sleep, our energy, our diet, how much iodine we have, our mineral, seasons, temperature. There's all these things that vary or should vary whenever there's a thyroid, functioning properly. But if you don't have that functioning properly and you're on a set dose, you're stuck with the governor. There may be a time in your life you need to floor it, so to speak.
Right.
And you can't. You go, why am I so tired? I just can't get out of my way. It must be my thyroid. And you check their TSH. TSH is fine. Well, you're on the right. And patients get really upset by that. They'll go see their specialist or their primary doc, and they'll say, but he said I'm normal. Your TSH is normal. It can't be your thyroid. Well, it still could be, because you need more thyroid hormone because your other organs, including your adrenal glands, are asking for more, maybe because of lifestyle.
Or they can't convert it.
Can't convert it enough.
Are you become resistant?
A wrong ratio.
Yes, and so that happens a lot, and you have to. And again, that's the medical literature. Don't treat thyroid without addressing adrenals.
Right.
But who does it? And I think
it's
one
not
reason
commonly taught to do. I can tell you that.
I think one reason why, doc, they don't have any tools in the toolbox to treat adrenal function.
Right.
I think that's one of the problems. What are they going to do for it?
Right.
Give a corticosteroid. I mean, think about it. Most medical doctors, you're going to use the tools you have in your toolbox.
Right.
You're one of the rare ones that has more tools in his toolbox than most that you can avail yourself to.
So if a person was trying to is in that mode of low thyroid function, say they have symptoms of fatigue, easy weight gain, maybe swelling or puffiness, or one I'll throw in there, carpal tunnel syndrome.
Yeah.
One of the most common reasons for people to have carpal tunnel syndrome, besides overuse or turning wrenches or messing with mouses all day long, is actually swelling inside interstitial tissues, which is caused secondary to low functioning thyroid.
Yeah, inflammation.
Yeah.
And that's it's very well established. Atherosclerosis, inflammation can be a thyroid in nature. So that's always very important. You don't think about that,
right.
But the integrity of your vascular system, thyroid malfunction can be an inflammatory disease
and
manifest itself that way. And we don't just, that's a great point to bring up. As a matter of fact, when being trained in physical therapy, one of the things we used to do was put iodine on patients with tendonitis or different problems and then ultrasound that in.
Mm-hmm.
Or different vehicles to drive that iodine into because that would relieve the symptoms of tendonitis.
Interesting.
That inflammatory. So there you go. It's amazing you brought that up because that is a sign of a struggling thyroid.
So somebody with poor tendon repair, struggling with tendonitis, things like that. I've not seen that used, but that's interesting that's a typical physical therapy thing to do.
Yeah. And the other thing people don't think about or don't consider, and it's an old axiom in Oriental medicine, thyroid governs heart, heart governs kidney. And so a lot of kidney dysfunction is caused by a weak heart, because thyroid controls the rate and strength of your heartbeat.
Right.
So many times when you have congestive heart failure, look upstream. It could be the thyroid not doing its job, not stimulating that heart.
I see a lot of patients like that.
And
it's funny. I know all these things you're saying, but it's funny to see it. And that what you just said to me as a physician is very enlightening, because I'd not heard that axiom, but I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
for sure. Now I'm starting to think of patients like, oh my goodness, that might help this person. That might help that person. Yeah.
You see, it's funny, you go to the hospital, you see someone in the hospital with congestive heart failure, and then the nephrologist is going nuts because the cardiologist wants to put them on something to slow down heart function to take the stress off it, and that's killing the kidney.
Yeah, it's a dance for sure.
And so then the nephrologist is going nuts because he's wanting to raise the heart, the heart function so the kidneys will live, and it's just it creates this vicious cycle.
Right.
So if your heart's failing, your kidneys are failing, then it could be because your thyroid's failing.
Right.
So a lot of heart issues that people miss, they're trying to put them on all these heart medications, is thyroid, when they didn't look upstream.
We're in the last 10 minutes or so of our show. I was wondering, let's talk about our favorite strategies for the person that might have symptoms of subclinical thyroid. In other words, their thyroid might be normal. Their doctor says their test is normal, but yet they know by looking at symptoms of thyroid disease they have those symptoms.
Right.
What do you like to do?
There's one little test you can do. It's controversial, but again, that's what medical doctors used to do in the past. They used to go on the inside of the arm where there's a little vasculature and right on the opposite side of the elbow, the crook of your arm, and they would paint about a 2-inch square patch of iodine,
monkey blood.
Yes, and they would watch, and if the body soaked it up very quickly, they would watch it for 12 to 24 hours. If the body soaked it up very quickly, you were iodine deficient.
How fast is fast for that iodine patch test?
Oh, mine was gone in a couple hours. Yeah, if it's still there 12 to 24 hours later, you're probably in good shape. If it soaks it up in a couple hours, you're probably iodine deficient, most likely. And so that was a good, quick little test that they would do. And plus looking at the physical symptoms, are you tired, fatigued, run down, thinning hair, cold hands, cold feet, gaining weight, depressed, low energy, all those types of things, heart palpitations. So those are all things that can be thyroid. One of the places to start is iodine fulfillment therapy. Mm-hmm. But you don't, like you said, you don't want to start out with just dumping gobs of iodine on the patient. So you might start off with a low dose. We use prolamine iodine a lot here in the clinic.
Right, that's what I use.
Yeah, it's a protein-bound iodine. Because, the iodine that you buy at the store and you put on a cut, you see it foam up and just tear stuff to pieces. That's why it works so good. That wouldn't be a good one to take because you don't want it tearing in the insides of your...
Exactly.
So it's bound with protein to make it bioavailable. And it's 3 milligrams, and that's a good dose. And you might start out with that one a day for about a week. And if they tolerate that very well, then you might go up to 2 a day, up to 4 a day. Because if you read the medical literature, women in Japan routinely get about 12 milligrams of iodine a day. They almost have no breast cancer and no thyroid problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they attribute that to their... Because they live on the coast, eat a lot of seafood, and seaweed is a big part of their diet. So they get a lot of iodine in their systems. So getting iodine, trace mineral B12, to get your trace minerals and the B12 that you need for iodine absorption. I either like cod liver oil or cataplex F, which is your essential fatty acids.
Right.
Again, needed for that iodine absorption. Sometimes thiotrophin. And what that is, that helps mitigate that immune response. If a gland is struggling, there's an immune response, and that will help dampen the immune response and give that gland or organ a chance to heal. So thiotrophin, you would take 3 twice a day on an empty stomach, and that'll find its way into the bloodstream and dampen that immune response.
You're talking about thiotrophin PMG.
Correct.
Right.
That is correct. And then you want to do something to look at the adrenal function. And there's so many tools for that. There's adrenal complex that you use. Licorice is a classic. Ginseng is a classic herb. Ashwagandha are all classic herbs to help stimulate the adrenal glands. Vitamin C, believe it or not, is crucial for thyroid function. Matter of fact, that's the reservoir in the body for vitamin C is in the adrenal glands. So a whole food C complex. Adrenamine That's one reason Adrenamin contains vitamin C. Right.
Another food-based support supplement for the adrenal glands themselves.
Correct, because if just giving ascorbic acid, for example, won't cure scurvy,
right?
Which is vitamin C's deficiency disease. And Svent Gyorgy, who won the Nobel Prize for the discovery of vitamin C, said, you know, ascorbic acid isn't it. That's not what vitamin C is. It must contain the bioflavonoids,
right,
and the tyrosinase factors. Vitamins are complexes, so you have to use a food concentrate, a whole food concentrate, and then you see miracles happen when you start doing that.
I think health, I'm a big picture guy, so I always look at, when you describe the way vitamins, the cofactors, basically what that means is it's not okay just to take one puzzle piece and say, well, I took ascorbic acid, so therefore I won't get scurvy.
Right.
You have to look at it's a picture. So there's multiple pieces to the puzzle that create the compound needed to give you perfect health. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think Royal Lee would describe it as a watch. You need all the interacting parts for the watch to work.
Right.
And you take out any one of the parts and it quits keeping time. And so you have to hit. So vitamins work that way. They need the enzymes and coenzymes and cofactors and all those components necessary. And because that's what you see in nature.
And ideally that comes from whole food diets. That's why we're, both of us constantly preach a low glycemic, low sugar, low processed food diet, rich in fats, proteins, and vegetables, and you know, things you can hunt
and seeds,
and gather.
Whole dairy.
Right.
Yeah, eggs, especially the egg yolks. You know, whole food. You know,
right. Real food.
What a crazy concept, Doc, that you would push real food.
Now, some people think, people ask me, well, couldn't I just get this all from my food? You could.
You could.
So why do you need supplementation? Well,
are you eating seaweed?
Yeah.
Are you eating seafood?
I think people get behind is what they do. They nutritionally, their reservoir. I've done hair analysis on patients. I've done, you know, all kinds of saliva testing, hormone panels. People get behind on minerals. And it takes a while to recoup. If you're dedicated to your diet, which you should be, you can regain your health through nutrition alone. Supplementation is that whole, what else could be done to in a concentrated format, support these systems? And that's all these supplements you've just mentioned are exactly what you would do for that.
Yes, you're working in a medical office. People are coming in already sick.
Yes.
You have to do something to repair that system.
Right.
You don't have time. Besides, we don't always know where our food source came. We're not like you grow your own food.
Right.
Yeah. You have a farm. You raise. You meet the animals you eat.
Right.
You've met the vegetables that you cook.
That's right.
So that's an amazing situation. Most of us don't have that opportunity.
Right.
And so we don't know where our food comes from. Mm-hmm. How it's prepared even makes a difference in the mineral content. The nutrients that were in the soil makes it
bad.
The stress we're under, living under, depletes us in ways we can't even. And we just live in this fast-paced, go, lifestyle. And we eat bad things like sugar depletes minerals.
Right.
You eat sugar, boom. You just soaked all the minerals out of your system and B vitamins, because you need those to metabolize. You need those minerals to metabolize sugar, and you just depleted it. So we're eating junk. We're drinking things like chlorine and fluoride and bromide and all our baked products. We're not getting a very good quality food source. And so we're under the gun. We are deficient. So sometimes that's why we need a whole food concentrates to fill in those gaps.
Right.
We just do. And then like me, you know, we're athletes, and you too. We put extra demands on our body that are unnatural. We put things not for health reasons, because we're trying to compete or perform at a higher level.
Right.
So we're putting extra demands on our body that need to be – so our systems need to be supplemented based on what we do. Like our daughters, they're out playing sports.
Right.
They're putting huge demands on the system, so they need that extra support.
Yeah, for sure. Well, any final thoughts on the world of thyroid? And, I mean, I think this has been a great topic from a standpoint of, if people are out there trying to, you know, accomplish what they want in the world, you got to have energy. To have energy, you have to have health. To have health, thyroid issues or stressors on the entire endocrine system are one of the number one problems that lead people to fall short of their goals. And, you know, when their health fails, they fall short. They don't get things done they want in the world. Final thoughts.
I think a great book is one written by Dr. Linda Brogan, who's a psychiatrist. And she used to be a medical doctor. I hand out prescriptions, just antidepressants like everyone else, till I got sick.
Right.
And realized the only way I could heal was by repairing my thyroid and adrenals. And she said, I don't give prescriptions anymore. It says for most of my patients, especially women going through depression and hard times, I address thyroid and address adrenals, and miracles happen. They heal. And she's, and it's a great book. It's called A Mind of Your Own. By Dr. Linda Brogan.
I've read it. Yes. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that's awesome.
And so that would be a good resource. You're not going crazy. There's nothing, you know, a lot of times people think, you know, I'm going nuts. I got this psychological issue. No, it's right. Physiological.
Right.
And just to know there is help out there.
Well, John, thanks again. I hope we'll do this again. And again, I think we're going to make this a regular sort of sub-series within the WFL Life podcast, because these kind of topics people just don't get everywhere. So
right.
Appreciate your time.
Yes, sir.